It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running on this 21st day of March, 2024, the second full day of spring. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. That is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between, and the great globe round, yes, and where if you pop into the aforementioned merry, wacky, zany right this instant, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers at Squeaky and Theo, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Mathematician, Chief Agronomist, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Yeah, I guess I was a couple of minutes late. Sorry about that. I actually was engaged in conversation with Annette because I had just come up with a lovely idea of another reason to sous vide another brisket. I'm on a brisket binge, y'all. There's nothing else to... Well, I'm powerless over brisket, and my life has become unmanageable. But we've made Rubens and whatever that thing is I do Havarti and coleslaw and Russian dressing and brisket on grilled rye bread. We've done that. You know, we did corned beef and cabbage. And it occurred to me, tell me what you think. I love those little potatoes I get at Kroger's, the tiny little potatoes. They come in the gold and the blues and the reds. And I love to just generally, I love to toss them in olive oil and put them out on a baking sheet, bake them at about 350 degrees for 20, 30 minutes, and then smash them. And they're yummy that way. But I got to thinking, what if I did that and, like, added in some chopped onion and then covered it, you know, added slices of brisket to that, and then, oh, I don't know, put a poached egg on top, or even a fried egg or a sunny side up egg, and had, you know, sort of ultimate bougie corned beef hash with some sort of lovely toast to go with it. That sound good? Because I mentioned it to Annette, and she was like, oh, I'd eat that. So that's... And so there I was just yakking away, and time keeps on slipping into the future. Right? Yeah. So that's a roundabout way of apologizing for being a couple of minutes late. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, consequently, we say thanks to our 21st day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you so very kindly. to Cat in Ohio. And thank you to Tracy on her way home, I presume, if not already home, from Puerto Vallarta. And thanks to Dave and the Blind. Christine's coming home this Saturday before Easter. She's going to be home for my birthday. Here's $25 for the... God damn it, the candles will get lit. Your buddy's Dave in the Blind. Don't know how Steve got in there, Dave. Don't confuse me. I'm a simple, humble hostess here, and I'm easily confused. But thank you so much, and that means that the fundraising goal is down to $1,610. Thank you so very much indeed. Thank you to whoever commented on Podbean. Prophetic. No, really prophetic. Liberal Political Talk Radio. Thank you for that. And thank you to Cat in Ohio. I presume that, I will make my way this weekend over to the mailbox over in Beckley at the UPS store. Thank you so much, Cat. And so, like I said, we're at 1610. That means that 5 full days of broadcasting are unfunded. That's today all the way back to Friday, and then we've got $110 to go on last Thursday, you know, a week ago. So basically we've got a little over an entire week of unfunded broadcasting, and hopefully that will improve, please, because there are so many bills to pay. I added things up. Let's see. Yeah, if we were to actually have a community made miracle today, it would, the entirety of it would be consumed by bills. So that's where we stand, just trying to keep even with these rapacious bastards. Now, let's see. Where did it? Where to begin? Well, there's something that I wanted to talk about over the last couple of days. It was a couple of days ago when a state senator from Arizona stand did something. It's another one of those moments where someone doing something here in the new 90 states of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, and it being an act of moral courage and true physical courage that shouldn't be deemed courageous. Eva Birch is the senator for District 9, Arizona District 9, in the Senate of the state of Arizona. And she rose, and bear in mind, they've got a Democratic governor, but a maggot legislature. And she rose and said, for maggots and the like, is... something unspeakable, when in fact it shouldn't even be necessary to talk about or to explain, but those are not the times in which we live. Eva Birch.
I rise today because...
Well, I guess we're going to have an ad first. Son of a gun.
I think it's important to acknowledge how this body has impacted my family and our journey, along with many others who are just like me. I don't know how many of you know this, but a few weeks ago I learned that, against all odds, I am pregnant. I wish I could tell you otherwise, but after numerous ultrasounds and blood draws, we have determined that my pregnancy is once again not progressing and is not viable. And once again, I have scheduled an appointment to terminate my pregnancy.
For me, I just think it's more important to normalize what's going on, for people to understand that what's happening to me is extremely common, that pregnancy failure is common, and that there are any number of reasons, of scenarios, of situations that someone might find themselves in where abortion is the right decision for them.
I don't think people should have to justify their abortions, but I'm choosing to talk about why I made this decision because I want us to be able to have meaningful conversations.
I had an initial instant outpouring of support. You know, I did not tell very many people that I was pregnant at all. So this was not information that was common knowledge, even among my colleagues in the Democratic caucus. So I think that people were just very sympathetic to my plight, to my situation, and I have had a lot of support. I've had people who just have questions, which is what I was hoping for. Arizona in particular struggles with the separation of church and state. I just want to make it really clear that if individuals have religious beliefs that kind of influence and inform their decision making about abortion and about their own pregnancies, I think that that is important. I think they should be allowed to do that. I think that's great. I think that's meaningful. I think that Arizona legislators should be able to believe freely, should be able to practice their religion freely. I just don't think that any of those religious beliefs should be imposed on others who don't share them.
I will never try to force someone to have an abortion. Nobody should ever try to prevent me from having mine. My experiences in this space, both as a provider and as a patient, have led me to believe that this legislature has failed the people of Arizona in the laws that restrict and dictate abortion and in the resources that it cuts and strangles and denies at every opportunity.
At 1-800.
She is, unfortunately, a terribly brave woman. And I think it's pathetic how when we talk about that, we have to talk about it in terms where we give little head pats and nyanyas to the religion industry, when in fact, it is far more an accurate and fair statement to say that any religion that tells a woman when she must and must, or when she must bear children. Any religion that tells people what they may or may not do with their bodies, what kind of headgear they wear, how they eat, when they eat, if they eat, what they eat, it can be ignored. And usually function only as a matter of tradition and accident of birth. I don't think as liberals or progressives we have a hard time comprehending or understanding that had any of us been born, and some of us were, in Muslim countries, we probably would have been raised Muslim. In other parts of the world, we would have been Jewish. In other parts, Buddhist. In other parts, Hindu. And, you know, in my case, Southern Baptist. And in so many of these cults, because remember, all religions have evolved from something else. Evolution is not just for biology. And in this case, religions evolve, and they all evolve from cults. And cult is not a pejorative term. But in this case, these cults have become toxic because they seek to control women's lives, women's bodies, women's access to care. And none is more pernicious, because we didn't have that much prayer meeting Wednesday last night. None is more pernicious than the Abrahamic religions. And in particular, Christianity. bunch of damn divines running around grunting with their knees bent. Men, almost always and uniformly men, leading the grunting and barking and hooting. Such that a woman like Eva Birch has to stand up and explain to the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gundamentalist, amosexual Christians why it is necessary for her to terminate a pregnancy. Her pregnancy was not going to lead to a child. And hers is a story not of convenience, but of heartbreak. And it's awful because she wants a child. But her body is apparently not terribly adept at carrying one. There is a subsection of the culture, a subsector of the culture, that considers her less of a woman for that. The TERFs and transphobes out there with all of their rhetoric, always wind up hurting cis women more than they do trans women by a reductionist fourth grade biology that reduces a woman to gamete production. You've got Joanne Rowling or Robert Galbraith or whatever they're calling themselves these days running around saying that women are big gamete producers. And thereby, of course, erasing infertile women. I myself far prefer the writings and the thinking of Simone de Beauvoir, who said, a woman is made, not born. And there's a feminist scholar named Judith Butler who started a lot of the discussion around gender. And she was writing as much or more about cis women than she was about trans women. And she's been speaking out lately because the backlash is against, of course, trans women, but every bit as much or more against cis women. Today, the House of Representatives in New Hampshire stand voted to prevent trans girls from competing in sports. And that it'll go through the Senate like shit through a goose, and then it'll land on the desk of the goose, Chris Sununu. Goose Nunu? Goose! Where he will sign it, and then, well, basically New Hampshire is buying themselves a lawsuit. And once again, I guess all the problems are solved in New Hampshire, Stan. The Granite State has nothing better to do in its legislature than to sit around and bark and grunt about people they don't know and problems they probably don't even have. The disease and the panic and the paranoia have even spread to the largest school district on Manhattan Island, who have done the same thing. This is not a discussion about trans people. Like I said, it's a discussion about religion informing public policy. And the Attorney General, Letitia James of New York, and the Governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, have both signaled that they support trans adolescents. And no, these kids, if they are, and again, this is it's a deliberately set up conundrum, a deliberately set up paradox. They don't want trans kids to get puberty blockers, but at the same token, or by the same token, at the same time, they don't want the kids competing in girls' sports. Again, because they never, ever worry about trans guys competing in men's sports.
Yeah, the real boys will just beat the shit out of them, and that'll be the end of that.
Completely oblivious to the cis girl a few years ago in North Carolina who won the boys' state championship in wrestling by whipping the asses of every boy she went up against in her weight class. Go figure. But it's a... It's just so infuriating to think about these children who are beginning their young adult lives absolutely soaked in discrimination. And speaking of which, a couple of people have asked me because I alluded to it yesterday because it screwed with my day in a big way. You know, what happened when I went to the pharmacy? So, I had a therapy appointment today, and I talked with my therapist about it, and in fact, whether it's worth going into here, and she said it probably would be, because if I've experienced it, someone else probably has too. And again, it's pointed at women. We know from all the stories over the years, these have been going on for eons, that as long as a pharmacist or a pharmacy technician has a deeply, sincerely held religious belief that I shouldn't exist, then it's okay for them not to dispense medication. The story's a little bit, there's a little bit of a background to it, but I was very happily a customer of the Kroger pharmacy. They've got a wonderful pharmacy staff over there. Professional, friendly, accepting, really wanting to help and make sure that my medical needs are met from a pharmaceutical standpoint. But I had to leave Kroger's because Kroger's, corporate-wise, for reasons I don't know, does not accept my insurance, which is one of the largest insurers in the state of West Virginia. It's a BCBS, for Christ's sakes. But they don't, so I had to move it all over to Walmart, because CVS is brutally expensive, one of the most expensive pharmaceutical experiences you can have. We learned that the hard way, all the way back when we were in Alabama after surgery. So my choices are CVS and Walgreens and Walmart. I went to Walmart just because I figured they'd have more luck getting, but no. So without delving into too much detail, the regimen for my hormone replacement therapy is for me to inject weekly something called estradiol cypionate. And I go into this at this level of detail so that everybody can fully understand that, you know, this isn't some fad for me. I have no ability to produce hormones in my body anymore. I have to take them externally or from an external source. So once a week, I inject estradiol cypionate, and it works its magic, and it keeps my bones. My brains have already turned to chalk. It keeps my bones from turning to chalk. And so when I was setting it all up, I explained to them, you know, and my provider sent a prescription for estradiol cypionate. And so yesterday when I showed up, you know, because I also have to have a prescription for my syringes, I was going to go and pick up my syringes and my estradiol. Well, this pharmacy tech comes down, and I step up to her, and I say, I'd like to pick up my syringes. And she said, oh, we got a prescription. You want to feel that? I said, yes, I would like to feel that. Well, I'll put it in the queue, and you can pick it up after you're done shopping. I said, no, I only came in here for this. I'll pick it up another day. Well, we'll only hold it for 9 days. Woman was just hateful. And I am unfailingly polite. I actually try to make sure that after someone's done interacting with me, that their day is better than it was before they interacted with me. And so I said, well, that's fine. You know, I'll pick it up tomorrow, the next day. Well, we won't hold it for 9 days. I said, it won't take me 9 days to get back here. Thank you. Now, I have a prescription for estradiol cipionate. And she said, oh, I know all about that. I was with the pharmacist when he was researching it, and you can't get it. I said, I can't get it? Is it back ordered? No, we just can't get it. Will that ever? No, it won't ever change. I said, okay, well, there are other formulations. There's something called estradiol valerate. And that would be an equivalent substitute. Can you check and see if that's available? No. I said, it's just a matter of seeing if it's available to you from your distributor. No, because we ain't got no prescription for it. Now, bear in mind, back at the Kroger pharmacy, we've gone over this several times. They have trouble getting estradiol cipionate. And I said, but we can get Valerate, because they went ahead and looked. And so I came away from that. I said, well, could you check on the availability of a topical? Because I can't use oral medication because it goes through the first pass of the liver and it doesn't metabolize properly for me. Well, I just can't help you. Thank you, madam. And I walked away. And I was so angry that I was shaking. Because through the course of the interaction, it became abundantly apparent what was going on here. Somebody, some freak back there, had a sincerely held religious belief that I shouldn't exist. And trans women, and I suppose trans men, deal with this. But God knows, before this ever happened to me, cis women of childbearing age and cis women with conditions like polycystic ovarian syndrome were going to get birth control at pharmacies and being told, most often by men, that they had a sincerely held religious belief that I shouldn't that they should not have access to birth control because I guess Jesus wants all women to be barefoot and pregnant until they can't anymore at the onset of menopause. And it's infuriating. Those people have no business working in pharmacies. Pharmacists who believe like that have no business being allowed to be pharmacists through state licensing boards. Because pharmacy is not a religion. It is a science. And ideological bigotry has no role there. Or should have no role there. But unfortunately, thanks to things like Hobby Lobby and 303 Creative, our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties have declared that bigotry is a protected right under the Constitution of the United States of America. So to the extent that I was a little bit bubble off plum yesterday, that's why. Because I walked out of there, again, shaking. Well, let's see. I kept shopping. I got a bottle of Fairlife milk and some zero sugar lemonade and a loaf of bread. That wonderful, wonderful seeded rye that I've been making the sandwiches on. But I couldn't get it off my mind. So today I talked with my therapist about it. See, therapy is cool. It's helpful. And she sort of guided me through the process, and she was like, oh, I said, and it made me question my own perception of reality. And she said, no, you were perceiving just fine. You were discriminated against by someone with a religious hang up about women like you. And I said, well, thank you for the validation, because I don't like walking around feeling like reality isn't what I think reality is. So I thought it might be beneficial just to go ahead and tell the story, and she agreed, because if it's happened to me, it's happened to someone else. And if you've ever felt something like that, and God knows I have lived such a privileged life that here at the tender age of 1 and 60 years, 61, y'all, I'm finally getting to experience it for myself. Other marginalized groups, members of other marginalized groups in this community are sitting there nodding their head and going, well, you know, welcome. You're finally figuring out what it's like, aren't you, white girl? Mm-hmm. I am. And I don't like it. And, of course, Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw down in the state of Alabama signed an anti-DEI law into bill into law yesterday, and she was damn proud of it. Now, that woman has a degree in education from Auburn University. And so now you've got teachers all over the state of Alabama who are afraid to teach a classic of Alabama literature. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird. That was, for years and years and years, the required book to read for ninth graders in Alabama. And yes, if you analyze To Kill a Mockingbird through a lens of being cognizant of racism and discrimination, well, it's overt in the book, because Atticus Finch, of course, defends a black man wrongly accused of rape by Mayella Yule and her daddy Bob Yule, them Yules who live out by the town dump. Po-white trash, as the term used to be. But there are life lessons there, and it is a story of courage and of injustice and the fight for dignity. But I guess, according to the state of Alabama and those sages who sit in its legislature, and Governor Hee-Haw Meemaw, who unironically was accused a few years ago by members of her own party during the primary process of being an alcoholic lesbian, that wasn't Democrats saying it, that was other Republicans. Even having that slur leveled at her, she still had no compassion whatsoever when it came to the insane furor over diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so now any office of DEI in any public institution of education must be dismantled so that, well, white people can properly occupy the spaces that God intended them to occupy. See how it works? Or doesn't? Well, there you are. Flavio says, my eldest sister has excessive menstrual flow. I forget what the condition is called, so she has to be on birth control so she won't bleed to death. Thank God she lives in New York City and not Syphilis Springs, Texas. Or Gonorrhea Gulch, Alabama. And all we can do is hope that we can work, but we can work based upon the hope that eventually this country will get better, that this spasm of hatred will pass. But it's not going to pass by itself. This is where the law is. It can be used to work for good and protect people while the spasm yet continues. The Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act were not passed because racism was over or Jim Crow was over. They were passed because it was active and fulminant and venomous. And so the law stepped in to make sure that civil rights, constitutional rights, were observed, no matter how ugly and racist individual state governments might be. And from the moment the Civil Rights Act passed and the moment that the Voting Rights Act passed, the right wing of this country swore a blood oath that they would not rest until they could once again enshrine bigotry, racism, prejudice in law once again. So that's been on my mind. And Eva Birch's heroic statement was sort of a jumping off point. But under no circumstances, however, is that the end of it. One more in the same vein. For this, we go to Nebraska-stan. And a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican maggot by the name of State Senator Steve Halloran, who is a repig-licking from Hastings, Nebraska-stan. Because in Nebraska-stan, because of course, they too are afflicted and diseased with the pernicious contagion of the right-wing spasm over obscenity. And of course, in the current spasm, obscenity is defined as anything that describes the lived lives of people who are not actually, cis, white, heterosexual, and Christian, and preferably male. And so it was that Steve Halloran read a passage from a novel called Lucky by Alice Siebold on the floor of the Nebraska legislature. Remember, anytime you talk about the Nebraska legislature, you have to point out that Nebraska is the only state that has a unicameral legislature. So it's just one body and then off to the governor for any bills that they pass. It's kind of like what happened on January 24th here in West Virginia when all of those good God-fearing et ceteras found their favorite dirty books and came and read them on the floor of the House of Delegates of the state of West Virginia. They reveled in saying pussy, one good Christian saying it 9 times. They exulted in talking about butt plugs, which another good Christian babbled about and read from a text. Well, Lucky by Alice Siebold is one of the most banned books of the last few years. Lucky, among other things, describes in graphic terms a rape that the author survived back when she was in college. The law in question was Legislative Bill 441, sponsored by yet another maggot, Senator Joni Albrecht of Repiglicken from Thurston, Nebraska, Stan. Probably more cattle in her district than there are human beings, but that's not salient to our discussion, I suppose. And so what Halloran was doing was reading from a transcript of the hearing in the previous year. Only what he did is there is a brother and a sister who are Democratic members of the body. The woman's name is Michaela Kavanaugh. She's from Omaha. And then there's her brother, John Kavanaugh. And so when he read this rape scene, he inserted one of his colleagues' names, and trigger warning, this is disgusting. Okay, let's try that again. All right, here we go.
Something tore. I began to bleed there. I was wet now, Senator Kavanaugh. I'm excited. I made him excited. He was intrigued and worked his whole fist into my vagina and pumped it. And it went into my brain. Stop staring at me, he said. I'm sorry, I said. You're strong. I tried. I liked it. He started humping me again, wildly. The base of my spine was crushed into the ground. Glass cut in my back and behind. He kneeled back, raised your legs, he said. Spread them. Give me a blowjob, he said. He was standing now. I was grounded on the ground trying to search about the filth of my clothes. He kicked me, and I crawled into a ball. I want a blowjob, Senator Kavanaugh. He held his dick in his hand. I don't know how, I said. What do you mean you don't know how? I've never done it before, I said. I'm a virgin. Put it in your mouth. I kneeled before him, Senator Kavanaugh.
That is so sick, it makes my stomach turn. As another member of the Nebraska legislature said, I'm sure some will overlook the direct harassment of invoking his colleague's name and say, well, context here matters. He was reading from a book. Yes, a book that is a memoir of a rape survivor. The fact that context exists is all the more reason that we can't ban books. And, of course, in that maggot legislature, there will be no consequences for Senator Halloran. Halloran describes it as a how-to-rape lesson, and said the only regret he had was that liberals aren't upset that the book was in school libraries. And in an email to a teacher said, oh, no, I was referring to Senator Kavanaugh's brother, John. If you would have listened closely, I was addressing her lawyer brother, John. Senator Michaela Kavanaugh, however, was having none of it. She said, he invoked both of our names at the start and then dropped the first name. Whichever one of us this assault was meant for just doesn't make it less horrific, though I believe it was directed at me. Men can also be victims of assault, and his response is dismissive of that fact. There are calls for him to resign. State Senator Julie Slama, who's a Republican from Dunbar, Nebraska, stand. I know, mirabile dictu, said, disgusting. No context makes this appropriate. State Senator Megan Hunt, a Democrat from Omaha, said, honestly, I think Halloran should resign. How dare he even form his mouth to say the words, give me a blowjob, Senator Kavanaugh. He said that because he wanted to say it. It was beyond the pale, pure aggression to read a rape scene out loud and put it like that. Broken brain. She added, that was so out of line and unnecessary and disgusting to say my name over and over again like that. You don't know anything about anyone's life, and I can tell you that women in this body have been subjected to sexual violence. I didn't know you were capable of such cruelty. That was so unbecoming of you and unbecoming of this body, and I hope that some other people who are Republicans will stand up and defend me. And a couple did. Senator Slama, not seeing anywhere that any Republican men condemned Senator Halloran. But this is the America in which we live. And it is an America that is more and more resembling places like Mother Russia. Matt in San Francisco writes, two bar workers arrested in Russia's first LGBTQ extremism case. Control the women, arrest the gays. I'm not encouraged by what's going on with these right-wing folks. Yeah, two workers in a bar are going to remain under arrest until May 18th and may wind up doing 10 years in some shithole Russian prison if they're convicted. The arrest order came from a Russian court. And it was for a bar administrator and the art director. They're charged with organizing an extremist organization based on sacred Russian law banning the international LGBT movement. The Orenburg Tribunal said, the court chose a preventative measure for the art director and administrator of the Pose Bar. They were promoting non-traditional sexual relations among visitors of bar. On the Russian-owned platform Telegram, the court continued and said, the accused people of non-traditional sexual orientation acted in premeditation with a group of people who also support the views and activities of the International Public Association LGBT. The two individuals are Diana Kamilyanova and Alexander Klimov. Once again, it's an international movement that I have no knowledge of. What's a girl got to do? Some horror show of a woman named Ekaterina Mizulina, who heads the League of Safe Internet. She said, this is first criminal case in Russia after the decision of Supreme Court to recognize LGBT as extremist movement. And we're, not getting any better. It's getting worse. The disease is spreading from this shithole to the rest of the world. Steve in New York, going back to Halloran, said, I think I heard this. This was beyond disgusting. Ralph said, what the fuck? I hope she sues him. She can't. He has legislative immunity for whatever hate pours forth from his filthy gob in the course and scope of being a senator for the great state of maggot state of Nebraska, Stan. Steve adds regarding Senator Halloran, the fact that anyone would even think to say that shit is, well, I have no words to sufficiently express disgust. And, well, thank you, Theo. Hey, Theo. Deepest commiserations, heard this too often. So sorry you're being put through this. Both my women co-workers and our women clients at my former job, medical insurance, that got that self-same runaround, and doctors who prescribed hormonal contraceptives for non-birth control-related conditions, were harried in some instances by Washington State Republican legislators. It didn't yet get national publicity, but it was a definite and maddening foretaste of what's happening now. It was and is wholly pointless. Yeah, it is. Well, no, I'm going to beg to differ with you, Theo. It's not wholly pointless. There is a very definite point. And the point is the cruelty. The cruelty is the point. They cannot stand the idea of LGBTQ people even existing. And they desperately want the LGBTQ community to go back in the closet or die so that they can feel happy and safe about themselves again, you know, in their own closet. And let's now that the countdown clock is on, let's talk for a moment about the latest on Nitwit Nero. Judgment by the Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, was entered in Manhattan, and in the last day or so, she has taken, the Attorney General has taken her judgment on the road. And in point of fact, she has now taken that judgment and filed it in Westchester County, New York. And it's a sign that Letitia James is getting ready to take away Donnie's babies. The judgments were filed with the clerk's office in Westchester County back on March 6th, actually. And it's come to light today. March 6th was a week after Judge Ngoron entered fully and finally the $464 million judgment against Nitwit Nero. And remember, it's also against Trader Tot and Eric the Dumber, as well as the entire Trump organization. And that's the first step you take when you want to take action on a judgment. So that means, the reason for Westchester County is because of the Westchester County is where his precious jewel, Trump National Golf Club, and some arguably tacky-ass mansion called Seven Springs are located. Meanwhile, with the judgment already entered in New York City in Manhattan, well, that's Trump Tower, the penthouse at Trump Tower, 40 Wall Street, his hotel next to Central Park, and several apartment buildings. Yet to have their judgment filed is Miami and Palm Beach County, where MAGA Loco and Trump National Doral Golf Club and Bedbug Emporium are located. There's also Cook County, Illinois, where the Trump Hotel Chicago is. And as of today, and today is pretty much over from a business standpoint, when the sun rises tomorrow, he will have 3 days to post the bond or satisfy the judgment so that he can pursue his appeal. So I would, if I'm calculating correctly, when the sun rises on Tuesday, the 26th of March, that sun may very well rise on agents of New York Attorney General Letitia James seizing property. Just for the sake of economy, I would expect the first places to be seized to be 40 Wall Street, that tacky-ass hotel next to Central Park, Trump Tower, and yes, Westchester Golf Club and Seven Springs. She could also simply place liens, although I would guess that she's going to go straight for the jugular, which is fine by me. Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Thank you, Ralph. Following up on Steve Halloran out in Nebraska, Stan. Leadership in the legislature has an investigation. Has started an investigation as of yesterday, going to Republican State Senator Julie Slama. Media outfit KETV asked her if the investigation is a positive step forward. And she said, no. It serves as a way for leadership in the legislature to conveniently sweep Senator Halloran's actions under the rug. And so Senator Raymond Aguiar said he personally appointed a special personnel panel with three members to engage in a formal investigation into what Halloran did. Aguiar, trying to defend the action, said, the lack of public comment from the executive board has led to some unfortunate assertions. Since that this incident was being swept under the rug, this could not be further from the case. Huh. Another case of troubling usage. Because the actual, usage is that could not be further from the truth. You see how the goddess of irony operates? Yeah. Now, on the other hand, Julie Slama said there's no need for an investigation. If anybody were to make those comments in any other workplace in the state of Nebraska, they wouldn't have a job the next day. They'd be open to civil liability, creation of a hostile workplace. He should have, asserting he should have just been tossed. And the investigation is going to stop any legitimate consequences like a censure or an expulsion, noting, as soon as we're off session for the year, we won't have the full legislature to take a vote on any of these things. And so Michaela Kavanaugh has filed a resolution for censure late yesterday. She said, I want the opportunity for others to weigh in on it, and I want the opportunity for the legislature to vote to say that this is unacceptable. Her brother John Kavanaugh said, I don't know what consequence should occur, but I was trying to do the work of the people of the state of Nebraska and of my district and focus on protecting free speech for librarians and teachers, and to have a verbal assault by an opponent of free speech who now is going to rely on free speech to protect them is ironic to me. Now, if there's any good news to be had out of all of this, their book banning bill failed by 3 votes yesterday. Senator Slama said, if anybody's wondering who to blame when it comes to why this bill was unable to pass this year, it's on Senator Halloran. And he apologized on Tuesday. But he refused to resign, and both the Kavanaughs and Slama said his apology wasn't anywhere near enough. This is what a Republican non-apology apology sounds like. I regret how I presented what I was presenting by calling out senators' names during the reading of that transcript. It's a very ugly transcript. Oh, it's the transcript's fault. So we will see if anything comes of it. I don't know if Michaela Kavanaugh's motion for censure is privileged or not. If it's not privileged, she may very well be able to... if it's not privileged, the legislature may be able to, again, sweep it under the rug. What a world. What else? Oh, by the way, we are into the second hour of the program. We have $1,610 to go to get fully to become to reach full funding for the month of March. Thus far, we're 2/3 into it, or 3/4 probably is better. Yeah, 1610. And, well, if we could take a bite out of that, it would be great. This is, what? Enjoyable? MSNBC has a podcast called Prosecuting Donald Trump. And in the in one episode, a bonus episode, none other than Liam Neeson and Glenn Close read the actual indictments of Nitwit Nero, and legal analyst Andrew Weissman and Melissa Murray then deconstruct what they've read. You might want to check that out. That's an unpaid product placement, by the way. And then this, the maunderings of Leon Scum just get weirder and weirder. On this program, from time to time, I have shared information that was posted online by a Harvard law professor named Alexandra Caraballo. She is a professor in the legal clinic at Harvard. She's also trans. And for a brief period of time, she changed her name to her own, plus the name of an individual, a vile, vulgar, bigoted, filthy, rotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg, bigot, who online hides behind the name Stone Toss. And Stone Toss is infamous for posting cartoons that he has created that traffic in anti-Semitic, racist, and anti-LGBT themes. Well, people have found out through the activities of some dedicated internet sleuths, the Anonymous Comrades Collective, which is an anti-fascist journalism collective dedicated to exposing Nazis, racists, and fascists. This Stone Toss animal has been posting his vulgar cartoonery, his hate, since 2017, but has grown more and more popular as time has gone by, especially among the white wing and among the maggots and the Proud Boys and the Patriot Front and the 3%ers and the Oath Keepers and the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff and the like. Over at the Global Network on Extremism and Technology, some folks, Hampton Stahl, David Foran, and Harry Prasad, say that Stone Toss is a crypto-Nazi cartoonist, a comic creator who pulls from neo-Nazi views and makes them more palatable for a broader audience. The Anti-Defamation League has said that Stone Toss is a far-right illustrator. He's done at least one cartoon lionizing anti-Semitic violence. Well, Alexandra Caraballo included the dude's real-world name, and he immediately whined to his followers, who in turn whined to Leon Scum, who, although, remember, Leon Scum is a free speech absolutist. Unless it comes to that free speech involving the identity of a hidden Nazi. And so, over at what used to be known as Twitter, Leon Scum ordered his minions to go in and delete posts and delete accounts and suspend accounts. And one of those people who was suspended was Alexandra Caraballo, who again just happens to be trans. And of course, Leon Scum is a vile and vulgar transphobe, his own daughter having abandoned him and gone into court to change her name so that she need never be associated with him again for the rest of his or her natural born days. How horrid must one be for one's own child to say, "I want nothing to do with you ever." And so suddenly the free speech absolutist, Twitter's a shithole. Twitter is a cesspit. It's nothing but bots and bigots and Nazis and transphobes. Although I still maintain an account so that I can access the little bit of actually valuable content that's there. I post a link to the show every evening there. But that's about the extent of it. I stay on there in large part so that members of the community who use it can reach me there. Hi, Carl in Phoenix, and hi, Tamara. But eventually, everyone will leave, and it'll just be another dissemination point for, among other things, propaganda from Mother Russia. Because that's how it rolls. Ugh. And the funny thing is, he was effective, Leon Scum, because It's actually hard to find out the identity, even though this collective has published it. With some outlets actually going so far as to make him the victim. Author of far-right comic Stone Toss allegedly doxxed by left-wing reporting collective. His real name is floating around the internet. He's got over nearly a half a million dirtbag proto-Nazis, racists, bigots, and anti-Semites following him on and the excrements that he posts on X. And I'm still trying to figure out why it is that Nazis want to hide their identity. They're so proud of their hate. And I'm just kind of drilling around here, and you got to work at it. Because if we can expose a Nazi, let's do it. And there it is. There's the original article from the Anonymous Comrades Collective. Stone Toss tossed. Hans Christian Grebener of Spring, Texas. Among other things, he makes light of trans suicide. He traffics in Holocaust denial, Islamophobia, homophobia, transphobia, racial superiority, anti-Semitism. Of course, he claims to be just edgy. And he's an edgelord. No, I'm not a member of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, a National Socialist, or a fascist. I just enjoy edgy humor. Redditors and other brainlets like to pretend otherwise, however. My work is similar to those often featured by Charlie Hebdo, published in the New York Times and shown on Family Guy, all famous non-Nazis. Ah, spring. The pollen's in the air. The collective says he may argue against being a card-carrying Nazi of 1938 to 1945, but that's why we have the term neo-Nazi. There was one panel of two wizards. No, Severus. You know, from Harry Potter, of course. Trans wizards are just as good as cisgender ones. Look, they already mastered levitation. And the next panel shows the two wizards looking at someone with a trans pride shawl about their neck, having just hanged themselves. He's gone into the... NFT market. And as the collective points out, he also fuels real-world violence. On May 14th, 2022, an 18-year-old man murdered 10 people in a racially motivated attack at a Buffalo, New York supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood. Prior to the attack, the murderer had published a 180-page manifesto which praised other well-known neo-Nazi mass murderers of recent years. Included in the manifesto were cartoons by several of the most prominent white nationalist cartoonists, including Stone Toss cartoons. And then there's the mass murderer who killed 8 people at the Dallas, Texas shopping mall in 2023. He shared Stone Toss cartoons on his social media. And so, having done the work, central to this, it was a hack, not even a hack, it was a data breach that exposed more than 70 gigabytes of data from the right-wing social media platform Gab. Well, it turns out that one of the cartoon series that this guy created, it was called Red Panels, was a participant on Gab. And that's where they found out that at Red Panels was registered with the email hgrabener@.com. And that email was found in a number of data breaches over the years. There were a lot of references to cryptocurrency, and, well, Stone Toss had a habit of promoting cryptocurrency. And then... they write, our conclusion that the creator of Red Panels and Stone Toss are the same person is also supported by the fact that one of the H. Grabener email addresses was used to register a Twitter account with the handle @MrRoasty. That needs a little bit of explanation. In the incel world, a roasty is, because they understand nothing of women's anatomy, a vagina with prominent labia minora, because these poor basement, Cheeto dust covered basement dwellers think that a vagina and a vulva has only one appearance, and that any deviation from that is proof that the woman is what they call street meat. And so a vagina with, or a vulva with protrusive labia minora is known as a roasty because they think it looks like, I know, dinner hour. So sorry. But this is what fascism looks like, y'all. They think that a vulva with protrusive labia minora looks like a roast beef sandwich that's been cut in half. You know, an Arby's roast beef sandwich. Who the Arby's people are going to be pissed at me? And so digging down, they found out that hgrabner@mm.com is associated with a person named Hans Christian Grabner of Spring, Texas, with a birthday of May the 9th, 1990. And according to an Ask Me Anything on Reddit, Grabner worked as a security guard in Texas somewhere between 2014 to 2017. And he's also been present in Gamergate, which involved the harassment of women who had the audacity to play video games. And it references a New York Mag article from 2014 in which someone described as, the New York Mag quote says, naturally, accusations of misogyny are thrown around, but as evidenced by the presence of women, of which there are a few, it is a diverse group. Hans paused and then winked. By the way, table dances are $10 and lap dances are $75. If you're interested, may I recommend Ms. Rain? An enormous bald man named Hans. They also found Grabner employed by an IT management company called OpenIT in Houston. Grabner went to Japan in May of 2019 as part of an OpenIT delegation and appeared in photos on the OpenIT LinkedIn page. At the same time, Stone Toss let his followers know that he had landed in Japan, tweeting, "Finally made it to the ethno state, fellas." And while there, said, "Attention, if you're a single white woman living in Japan, I know a 8.5 out of 10 tall white man employed as a programmer in the U.S. who's currently open, but probably only briefly so. Hit the DMs for details." And then, "Holy shit, I just realized you can drop the N-word in Japan and nobody cares." And he worked really hard to scrub his identity, but these folks found him. They wrote, "Despite promoting racism, xenophobia, anti-LGBTQ plus bigotry, and Nazi ideology for years through the Stone Toss and Red Panels webcomics, and despite his nearly pathological paranoia about being exposed, in the end, Hans Grabner was not as careful as he thought. As it turned out, his real identity was just a stone's toss away, so to speak. A former security guard turned IT guy harboring an obsession with circumcision and racial hatred, Grabner created cartoons that reached everyone from casual online white nationalists to killers, politicians, and spoiled billionaires." So now there's one less Nazi hiding behind a mask. And the Anonymous Comrades Collective deserves all the credit. It'll be curious to see how OpenIT responds to this. We are at the halfway point of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. If there's something on your mind, feel free to reach out on Skype or the other number, 304-574-8178. Someone is on the stress line. Let's find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good.
This is Carl.
Yes, hi, Carl. I thought so.
I'm really excited. I've never called into the program. So it's
well, I mean, you've been.
I have called in on Friday.
Yeah, you've been on Friday on the front porch.
Yeah, but that's kind of different. This is a one-on-one with the famous Robin Kincaid. Yeah. I'm so honored.
Not nearly as famous as you think.
Well, loved by millions. How about that?
Okay, we'll get to work. We'll get right to work on the million part.
Yes, you can strive for it. Thousands right now, I would say.
Okay, dozens.
Tens of fives.
Okay, yes. I think we've reached consensus. No.
Well, I am so pleased to finally get to just have a chat with you.
I'm tickled pink. What's up?
Well, there were a few things that I was going to talk to you about, but, you know, as soon as you answered the line, they all flew out of my head. But I was listening to you talking about Mr. Stone Toss.
Yes.
Egridna. I just happened to do a search on him, and I found a really interesting thing on Reddit about him. I put a link to it in the chat room.
Okay.
But, it talks about his, all the reasons why he's an actual Nazi. And he gives all the examples of comics that he's drawn, you know, praising Hitler, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he's a nice guy.
Well, I just had a note from Micah up in Michigan, and she said, for crying out loud, you can't throw a sock into an IT room without hitting a trans person or non-binary person or someone of the LGBTQ persuasion. Forget the company. I wonder what his coworkers are going to think. It sucks. He's still spreading his vitriol. I find it funny, though, that he works in IT. Okay, maybe not that funny. Things sometimes be pretty bad.
I know. Yeah, I actually saw that he had a new cartoon out today, which is interesting.
Well, I find it interesting. What I find particularly interesting is the fact that Leon Scum, you know, the son of an apartheid billionaire, is rushing to his defense.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, that's Leon for you.
Isn't it? Yes.
It sure is. There are a few things that have startled me on Twitter, X, where Leon has responded to people that you would not even casually respond to. You would normally just block. You know, like responding to things that are either racist or anti-Semitic, you know, with his stupid, like, agreed or good question and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, you know, he's cut from the same mold as Joe Rogaine and those other MRA types, Manosphere types. You know, he's a jack-off. Just asking questions.
Yeah.
And in fact, Matt in San Francisco pointed out something about Leon Scum yesterday that I read and didn't get to in yesterday's program, but it's like, wow, how about that? Matt had written, we're talking about Elon. His car models are, and he lists them vertically, the Model S, the Model 3, the Model X, and the Model Y. It spells sexy. Leon Scum is like a pubescent boy with $150 billion. Hint, he's no genius.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these guys are like that, though. Mentally, they got stuck when they were, like, 14.
Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much explains everything.
And, you know, I mean, and you know,
they finally get to leave this.
Yeah, and I think there's probably some porn brain rot involved there somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm...
Sense of entitlement.
Oh, and that entitlement is universal. They're entitled to everything that happens. They're entitled to wealth. They are entitled to access. They are entitled to women's bodies. They are entitled to luxury. They're entitled to hurt or help anyone that they wish to, particularly on the hurting end of the scale. And I'll tell you the truth, Carl, one of the things that bothers me most, I was thinking about this, because one of the defenses of Leon Scum is, but he builds rockets.
Oh, God.
I am a child of the, I'm a child of the space age. I was born just after Alan Shepard and John Glenn, and as a child watched as we landed on the moon, and Neil Armstrong uttered those famous words, with one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, which then went on to fizzle because of Richard M. Nixon. Well, Henry, they're not watching moon landings anymore. It's costing a lot of money. When, in fact, it was a drop in the damn bucket. So we just more or less gave up on space exploration and decided to do the space shuttle instead.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have longed, I have yearned for us to get back to space and get back to exploring the moon and you know, sending people where no one has gone before. Okay, I mean, there is a certain romance that attaches. You know, it's a gag. It's a bit around here about having obligatory Star Trek references.
Yeah,
fucking elves. But it's also real. And I am ashamed. I don't know that I've necessarily said this. I am ashamed that we've decided that the only way we can go back to space is if a billionaire, misogynistic, transphobic, LGBTQ, homophobic bigot takes us there. What does that say about the future, Robin, of humans in space?
I am more than just ashamed. I am actually terrified. Because giving one person like that so much power is really scary.
Well, it means that
it opens up the doors for all kinds of abuse.
Well, just to be a little bit flip, but, you know, fascists in space. Like I said yesterday, everything that was ridiculous and funny back in the day is coming true and terrifying now. How long ago was it that Mel Brooks gave us Nazis in space?
Yeah.
And Springtime for Hitler, and Hitler on ice, that showed Hitler skating around on an ice. But if going to, because you know he's also deeply invested in discrimination. So, you know, there won't be, and I wonder how many LGBTQ plus people work at SpaceX.
Well, on that Don Lemon interview, which I'm sure you've seen, I don't know if you talked about it.
It was painful.
But just his entire attitude of, you know, I have to answer a question. Who, and, you know, the smug looks and indignant faces that he made. I mean, it just made me sick, really. And, you know, the scary thing is that, you know, whatever, what is his satellite internet?
Starlink.
Situation? I forgot the name.
Starlink.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine if he decided to team up with the government and say, I'm going to provide free internet access to everyone in the United States. And the government paid him to do it. And can you imagine how much power that is?
Well, you do know, you do know, Carl, that we're already doing that relative to the to Ukraine's defense against Mother Russia. The United States government is paying Leon Scum horse gagging wads of money so that Starlink can be available to the forces fighting the forces of darkness of Mother Russia. And in fact,
he can disable it at any time.
Right, and he actually, and I personally think it's a deportable offense that he interfered in U.S. foreign policy by turning off Starlink to protect the Russian Navy in the Black Sea.
Yep.
And now he's out there defending a neo-Nazi?
I have this really bad feeling that we're returning to a feudal system. But that's coming.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, it never gets stated explicitly in the Republican National Committee's platform. But the fact of the matter is, return to feudalism might as well be the title of any Republican Party platform in any given presidential election year.
I know. And sometimes I wonder if the reason why these assholes like Bannon and Musk and others are so flippant and carefree is that they know the fix is in. And that they're totally safe. Sometimes my mind goes places that are just horrifying.
Well, you're not alone.
And you know that link that I sent you? I don't know if you talked about it on your show, about that secret society?
Oh, yes. I watched that segment with Joy Reid, and it was horrifying. But it seems like every other day there's another secret right-wing fascist society of men who, want to control the world. And what? I mean, they've got a list,
Well, in case your listeners don't know, I mean, there's an article on Talking Points Memo about it. And it says, inside a secret society of prominent right-wing Christian men prepping for a national divorce. And it goes through and explains all the tenets and about the guy who's in charge, who calls himself a warrior. And he has this compound in Indiana, and he's like actively searching for, quote, shooters to help protect him and his compound. Everybody that, to be a member of this society, you have to be invited. Like, you can't just join. And it's only for Christian, heterosexual, and in his words, unhyphenated Americans. And you have to answer questions and prove your loyalty to Christian nationalism and to Trump. And their aim is to secure a future for Christian families. I mean, that's some scary shit.
Well, and when we talk about secure a future for, I'm not sure if you're aware, Carl, but there is a Nazi trope, and I'm looking it up now because I don't want to get it wrong. And it's simply referred to, I think, as the 14 words. And it's the anti-defamation.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
The Anti-Defamation League says that the 14 words is R, English major, right? We must secure the existence. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children.
Wow.
It was coined by a Nazi named David Lane.
Well, that's why some of these.
Yeah, a Nazi named David Lane, who was a member of the Order, a terrorist group, coined the phrase before he, died in prison in 2007.
Aw, what a shame.
But what you just described is a manifestation of those self-same 14 words, is it not?
Oh, totally. And, you know, they, some of these maggots put the number 14 in their username.
Of course. Or 88.
Right. They think they're being flipped.
Oh, they think it's they're incredible. They think they're clever.
Oh, they are clever. They graduated 8th grade.
That's 6th grade. Jethro Bodine, I done graduated 6th grade. First in the family to do it.
Exactly. That's the reason to be proud.
I want to be a streetcar conductor because they get to wear one of them blue serge suits and have a nickel squirter.
Yeah.
See, this is why I was never any good at mathematics. My brain cells were all full up with quotes from Warner Brothers cartoons, The Beverly Hillbillies, and Green Acres.
You know, I was an English major too, and I only had to take one math course in college.
Same.
It was college mathematics was the name of it. It wasn't even algebra or any of that shit. And I took it, failed, took it again, got a D.
Gentleman's D.
And it was like my last semester, and I was graduating, like that, you know, in the spring.
Oh, dear God, and you had the sword of Damocles over your head.
I know, and, you know, I waited. I just couldn't deal with it. And so I had a professor who was, like, very influential. She was wonderful. And she had a talk with the dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and somehow got me to still graduate, which was awesome.
Well, I too have.
Because I sure the hell didn't want to take it again.
The only math class I took in college didn't even get 3 digits in its name. It wasn't Math 101. Oh, hell no, Carl. It was Math 23. And the formal name the formal name of it was Introductory Concepts in Mathematics. I took it during the summer semester because my thinking was I remembered back to high school and the fact that I actually made an A in Algebra 2 in high school because it was the only thing I had to focus on.
Yeah.
And so I was mortified, and I found Math 23, Introductory Concepts in Mathematics. And I rapidly found out what it was fulfilling the math requirement for the athletic department of West Virginia University. Because I sat in class every day, you know, I'm no shrinking violet. You know, I was 6'2" and 200 pounds.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to get back there now. I've lost a couple of inches of height.
Yeah.
I
actually started that no carb diet myself.
I count my carbs.
Very expensive.
But I was surrounded by the heroes of WVU sports, particularly from the football and basketball teams. And I felt downright petite sitting next to them in the classroom there. Yeah, 6'2" and being dwarfed by this 7-foot dude. And here's the best part, Carl. I wound up being a mentor. I taught the football I taught the football and the football and basketball team how to count in Mayan glyphs. Because that's one of the things we learned along with watching a film called Mickey and Donald Go to Math Magic Land, which lo and behold showed up on the multiple choice final exam. I think it was one of the
in high school.
No, this was college. This was WVU.
Oh, in college?
Yeah. One of the guys who would go on to be an All-American offensive lineman would always come by. He would be the bouncer at some of our fraternity parties. He'd come by and go, "Thanks for helping me pass that math course, Robin. It was real hard." Bless his heart, he was a sweet guy, but just a mountain of a human being. And
well, when I was working on my master's at ASU, I was a tutor for ASU athletics, which was, I really liked it a lot. And the students liked me and I liked them. And, you know, I kind of wondered about it because they really weren't as dumb as the made out to be.
Right.
At least these kids weren't. And, you know, you got to meet a variety of different people and, you know, some hot guys, of course. And there was a guy that was a diver in the Olympics for Finland. And he was one of the students I worked with very closely. Not as closely as I would have liked to. But, you know, there were rules.
Damn
and
rules.
And I followed them.
Yes.
Talking about TV shows, old TV shows. I always say this to my friends, and I feel it is partially true. One of the reasons that I'm gay is because of Bewitched.
Wait, hold on. Bewitched gayed you?
Yes.
I mean, I understand.
An influence.
Bugs Bunny definitely transed me. You know, Bugs riding in the Valkyrie costume on the back of that really pudgy white horse with the Viking brass bra and the helmet with the horns and Brunhilde, you're so lovely. Yes, I know it. I can't help it.
Yeah. Well, I used to have a really terrible drinking problem. I don't drink anymore. I haven't in years.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And one of the reasons also is because of Bewitched.
Well, those people would come home. Yeah, they were torqued.
And Samantha would always make them a drink, or they'd have brandy or whatever when the tapes came over. And, you know, it just made it seem so wonderful and exciting.
Well,
you know?
It was urbane. It's the sophisticated life, is it not?
Sophisticated, right. And even as a child, I was, like, admiring that sophistication. You know, and the other thing that turned me gay is Mary Poppins. Oh, totally.
Was it Dick Van Dyke?
When I was a kid, yes. When I was a kid, I begged my parents to get me a Mary Poppins lunchbox. And of course they never did.
No.
They would get me like Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah,
like
you were no sooner going to get that Mary Poppins lunchbox than I was going to get my Easy Bake Oven, and I learned to only ask for that once. No son of mine.
I remember going to the store and seeing it. Yeah, and I was like, Mom, I want that, please. No.
Well, Carl, I guess I was a little more edgy than you, because. This is a sweet story. We went to see Mary Poppins and got home, and I said, Mother, where's the umbrella? And she, because I was headed for the roof.
Oh, gosh. I hope you didn't do it.
No. It was years before I would be allowed near an umbrella. The same thing with the Batman utility belt. I think I've talked about that in the past. I saw, and this was during the heyday of the original Batman TV show, and in the window of a toy store near our house, there was a Batman utility belt. And
ooh.
My mother absolutely, she told me years later, she said, you wanted that so badly, and your dad wanted to buy it for you, because anything, please, just anything that's masculine, give it to the kid, you know. That's another thing you only say once. I want to go to ballet with the other little girls. No. For next opportunity, I got my very own football uniform with shoulder pads and knee pads and a football and a helmet. Go out and bust your skull, kid. But years later, my mother told me that she told my father in no uncertain terms that I was not getting that Batman utility belt because she knew what I would do the minute I got it. Once again, I would head for the roof.
Oh, shoot.
And I would, and or I would use my batarang to attach it to the apex of the roof and try to rappel up the side of the house. And she said, "And our baby is going to fall and break his damn neck if you get him that thing." And again, I only found this out years later. And then, I guess maybe when Ferg was about 4, lo and behold, one Christmas, she comes up on Christmas morning and hands Ferg and me an identical box to unwrap.
Oh.
And Ferg tore into his, and I tore into mine, and lo and behold, we had father-son Batman utility belts.
Oh.
Isn't that sweet?
Nice.
And then,
yes, I love it.
And then I had to go about the business of keeping my son from heading for the roof.
Well, you know, when my parents were at work, my brother and I used to jump off the roof into the pool.
Your poor parents.
Or ride a skateboard. Skateboard off the roof into the pool. Stuff like that.
And you lived to tell the tale.
Thank God I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Oh,
Carl.
I'm glad that I would never do such a thing. Now, isn't it funny the things you do as a kid? And
well, we've started a bit of a conversation, Carl, because Matt in San Francisco just wrote in and said, "I blame Gentlemen Prefer Blondes for making me a drag queen." Well, if anything would do it, that would, Matt. And Matt, by the way, is beautiful when he drags up.
Well, so. Then when I was a teenager, I discovered Diana Ross. And she's been my female icon ever since. Just love her.
Oh, yeah. The Diana Ross to gay pipeline is a real thing.
I am a Grateful Dead level follower of Diana Ross concert.
Wait a minute. Wait. Where is it? There's your first cowbell, Carl. Grateful Dead level follower of Diana Ross. I don't... You know, from one English major to another, Carl, I don't think that phrase has ever been uttered in the English language before.
Well, I'm not alone. And there's a bunch of us who go to almost everyone. I hit the West Coast. All the West Coast shows I try to go. And I've been doing that since 1985. And I even got to go on stage with her. Giving you a hug and a kiss on the cheek. I mean, yes, I'm just so happy that happened. I mean, I'm like a major fan, and I just love her. And, you know, she's brought so much a part of my life. Like, you know, when I was struggling with my identity and stuff, and, you know, for some reason, she really helped me. And, you know, so did, like, the Pet Shop Boys. And
oh, dear God.
The Smiths.
What was that one hit? West End Girls? Was that
Pet
Shop Boys?
That was their first hit, actually.
Yeah. I have been known to go down the road blasting that at 150 decibels.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Call the police. There's a madman around.
Right. If, when, where, what? How much have you got?
Have you got a ticket?
If you get it, how often? What do you prefer, a hard or soft option?
And the chorus, and the angelic chorus in the background.
Yeah.
See, all of this, it's so wild.
And I love that bait.
All of this stuff was gaying you while it was transing me. Go figure.
Yeah, I have to include David Bowie in the mix, too.
Oh, you went there. The first time that I actually paid attention to the lyrics of Rebel Rebel was like a
I can see that.
Was like a revelation to me.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I've been known to listen to that at 150 decibels. It always picks me up.
Put on your dress. Your face is a mess.
Yeah, you've got your mother in a whirl. She's not sure if you're a boy or a girl. Hey, babe, your hair's all right. Hey, babe, let's go out tonight. You like me and
yeah.
I love that. You like me and I like it all. We like dancing and we look divine.
Uh-huh.
You've torn your dress.
Yeah.
Your face is a mess. How could they know, hot tramp? Oh!
I know. I love you so.
And honestly, Carl, you know, I don't know. Maybe my mind is just open because today was therapy day. But I look back on things like that, and that's the only regret I have, is that I missed out on that part of my life. So, you know, bless her heart, you know, Annette keeps an eye on me to make sure that I don't go out in my rebel phase, because she'll remind, Roxanne, you are 61 years old. You don't get to do that now. And so I go back to the bedroom and I take off my micro mini skirt and you know.
Well, bless her heart. One of my biggest obsessions also was Holly Woodlawn. You know who she is?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm a big fan of Andy Warhol movies from the 60s and 70s. And she was a cross-dresser. I don't really consider that she was trans, but it was hard to tell with her because sometimes she was a man. But anyway, she was in a lot of his films, like Trash and Joe D'Alessandro, you know who he is?
Right.
He was like this real hunky male model in the 70s. Anyway, she played this woman who was just obsessed with getting guys' head. And it was like a favorite thing. And she would collect trash and bring it back into the apartment. And it was just this weird movie. I mean, it was very bizarre. And, you know, years later, I discovered that she was on Facebook. And so I friended her, and we used to kind of instant message each other sometimes. And she passed away like in 2014, I think. But she was a goddess. She really was. There were so many of those Andy Warhol superstars, like her and Candy Darling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Eddie Sedgwick. But, you should really check those out if you're into avant-garde art house weirdness.
I've seen a couple of them. Like I said last night, we're watching Capote versus the Swans right now.
Oh, yes, I heard you.
And yeah. It's so...
I watched it.
That man was deeply troubled. But with the black and white ball, you know, because he was such an iconoclast, Andy Warhol showed up and absolutely refused to wear a mask.
Oh, I can see that.
Which must have just infuriated Truman Capote.
Yeah, they both ran the same circles, because Andy did portraits of all those women. And I watched the whole series. It's really good. I loved it.
Well, we will be on.
Absolutely loved her.
Oh, Naomi Watts is, and seeing Calista Flockhart, you know, after Ally McBeal all those years ago, and seeing her playing Lee Radziwill now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Who was a terrible person? Absolutely terrible woman.
Well,
I love Diane Lane too.
Oh
she
yes.
Phenomenal in that day. All of the acting was. Her. All of it. I mean, it was great, the whole thing.
And now I want to go back.
And it was good to see Gus Van Sant back as a director.
Oh yes, and I want to go back now and see the original feud, the Bette Davis versus Why does that happen to
me? Yeah, Joan Crawford.
Joan Crawford.
I haven't watched that one, but everyone tells me that it's a must see.
I think there's so much good TV out there right now. I mean, this is.
Well,
been,
I'm
this
a big
been...
fan of Ryan Murphy. Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk, I think is his name. They do American Horror Story. They did this. They do all, you know, both of the feuds. Everything they do, you know, did you see the Boys in the Band, the newer version?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God, you have to see it. It's the same Broadway cast. It was like in 2000-something. And it's a Ryan Falchuk thing. I mean, yeah, a Murphy Falchuk kind of thing. And, you know, they're involved, so it's high quality. And the actors are super. It's really good. It's interesting. It's a really good movie. And it's on Netflix, I believe.
Okay, I'll
and they also did Pose.
Oh well, Pose, yes. I watched the first season of Pose as I was standing on the precipice of transition and coming out, and it was mind blowing. And I couldn't.
It's wonderful.
And by the time I got to season two, I couldn't watch it because it was too real. It was too close to the bone.
Oh.
It's kind of like the first time, you know, way back when, the first time I watched Tu Wong Fu, it was like, ha, 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 this is such a funny movie, ha, ha, ha. And then a few months into transition with my hormones completely changed, I watched it again and I cried all the way through it. It wasn't funny anymore.
Wow.
Because particularly I realized that Hollywood had done it again. Gotten us completely wrong, because while in fact Chichi Rodriguez was a little Hispanic boy in a dress, Noxzema and Vita were clearly full timing.
I just love it.
They were women full time, and I do love that scene where Patrick Swayze kicks the redneck's ass, and Wesley Snipes is just standing there. She works out.
Wait a minute, is that is that movie based on real people?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
I thought that's what you meant when you were talking.
No, there was, I mean, there obviously there was a real Julie Newmar.
Right, of course.
And I love her cameo at the end of that one. Because she truly was a goddess.
Well, I do love Pose, and Pose made me cry plenty.
Yeah.
But I am happy to see a lot of the actresses that were in it pursuing other film roles and stuff.
Right, and not having their careers ruined by their presence in it.
Right, and not playing like a troubled, suicidal victim.
Yeah, oddly enough, people who aren't cis and straight can lead surprisingly happy lives. It's like what I say. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah.
I am. I'm 95% happy. But the other 5% is having to get up every morning and find and read a bunch of articles about how despised I am for just being alive. And like I said, anybody that wants to go, well, you know, now you're finally finding out, Roxanne, guilty. I breeze through life as a straight white guy. But it's amazing how quickly all that shit disappears.
Stephanie. Yeah. Stephanie has been trans long as I've known her, since like 2005 is when I first met her. And we're still friends. And she is so wonderful. Of course she loves Stephanie Mills. That's her name, right? But she is just seems very happy. She lives with her husband. She's married, you know, and they live a very normal couple lifestyle. But we get along a lot because we both love collecting vinyl records.
Oh, God, you're a vinyl junkie?
And, Robin, I have 2,000-plus records here. I go on Discogs to catalog them, and, you know, I got renter's insurance just because of that.
Oh, in Arizona, you've got to be, I mean, making sure you've got your climate control well in hand has got to be a priority of living for you.
Well, yeah. I mean, inside it's not bad. It's outside. And the one of the main problems that arises, because I order a lot of them online and have them delivered, and if they stay out too long, that's it. That's happened a couple of times. You know, like when the postman just drops them off at the door. So that's been an issue. But, you know, if you keep them inside with the AC on and stuff, because, you know, it's rare enough to be another 120-day summer, looks like. But, you know, it's hotter than hell out there in the summer.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. If you have a power outage, you have to worry.
But I am a sun worshiper, let me tell you. I've been here, you know, I was raised here. I went to school here and all that stuff. And I don't know. It doesn't really bother me that much. The thing that bothers me is cold. Cold, I cannot abide. And I lived in Boston for a while. And the first time I was freezing my ass off and we were inside and I was watching the news and it said that it was 2 degrees was the temperature. And I was just blown away. I was like, what? I'm like, is that a real temperature reading? 2? Oh my God.
The English major who only the English major who only took one math class is wondering if 2 is a real number.
Yeah, for temperature.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned having gone to Arizona State. I've been watching Suits and enjoying it quite a lot. Gabriel Macht is a wonderful actor, and good God, Sarah Rafferty as Donna just murders me. But it's funny how they will work little tiny bits that's only noticeable to people who would be paying attention. A guy named Rick Hoffman plays Louis Litt, one of the litigators.
Yeah.
And he's kind of comic relief, but he's also tragicomic. But I looked up his bio, and he got his degrees in theater and acting at the University of Arizona. And you know, the rivalry between Arizona and ASU is legendary.
Yeah.
Between the Wildcats and the Sun Devils. And so, lo and behold, there's
ASU is so much better.
Of course it is. So there's this one little throwaway line that Louis Litt utters about... And his character loves the ballet, loves theater... And there's this one little throwaway line where he said something about living some pathetic life with my degrees, with a degree from Arizona State. And there was such venom.
Oh.
There was such venom, such absolute disdain in the way he delivered the line. And
God.
I was like, oh my God, you put that... They put that in the script just for him so he could get the needle in at his hated rival.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, whatever. I mean, they live in Tucson, which is, I mean, actually Tucson is a very liberal city. And Phoenix is becoming, is so different than it was when I was like a teenager. So good. I mean, and you know, believe it or not, there's a lot of cultural stuff here in Phoenix. We have the Phoenix Symphony, we have ballet, and, you know, all of the major theatrical tours come here.
All those things that I refer to generically as civilization.
Right. And those are the things that I'm into. So I'm very happy about it. But I could never live somewhere where there wasn't anything like that. It'd be really hard.
No, you would.
But
you,
when I went to Boston, everyone. When I went to Boston, everyone was like, "Okay, Carl, you have to get a nice, warm coat, gloves, a scarf, and like those shoes that you put over your regular shoes."
Yeah, over shoes. Yeah.
And yeah, and I said, "You guys are pussies. I don't need that shit." And I went to Boston, and the first time it was winter, and I was coming home. I worked at Blue Cross while I lived there. And I was coming home riding the T. I lived in Dorchester. And I was riding the T, which is their subway.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
was freezing ass cold. Freezing ass cold. I was on the Red Line at the time. I got off, and I was in the middle of downtown Boston, and I said, "I'm gonna die!" My eyes were frozen, like the tears. It was actually making me cry, and the tears were like freezing. I mean, I was so damn cold. I was wearing a hoodie, and I immediately marched myself over to the department store. I can't remember which one it was. It was like the big one. It wasn't Filings Basement. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, got a charge card for that store and just bought the biggest, heaviest wool coat I could find and some gloves and a scarf. And I said, and I tossed my hoodie in the trash. And I thought, they were right. They were right. I was wrong. So I am a pussy when it comes to winter. Yeah.
I used to be better at winter than I am now. You talk about being a sun worshiper. I love nothing more than warm sun. And I have to be, and I used to not be very careful about it, but now I have to.
Yeah, me neither.
And you know, I'm so pale I burn under the refrigerator bulb. And it's a challenge for me because warm weather comes and, you know, I think you probably heard me mention one of the things that I did after transition is I went and I got a tattoo of Tinkerbell down my right thigh.
Oh, yeah. How sweet.
And so, you know, whoo, I'm out and, you know, and I'm out and flitting around the yard and working on barbecue and all that. And it's like, it's heaven. And no, I have to be dipped by the heel in SPF Avogadro's number just to hope that I don't burn and blister and peel. Because again, my 23andMe came back. And I'm so Northern and Western European, it came with an invitation to join the Nazi Party. It was terrible. I could actually pass those racial purity tests that they had back in the 1930s and 40s. It's embarrassing.
You know, I did the ancestry DNA, and I'm like 58% English. The rest, there's a little bit of Wales, Scotland, and Irish, and then the next one is Norway, and the only thing that was the odd man out was just like about a 4% dash of Portugal.
See, so, I don't even get any of that. Yeah. I am English, Irish, Scots, no Welsh, which is really weird given my old last name, English, Irish, Scots, deep Scandinavian, but German and Swiss.
Which is funny because I always expected, I thought that I was German, to be honest. I thought it was I knew they were probably English, but I didn't know that it was German. And the funny thing about ancestry is like, I can trace my family all the way back to the 1600s in the United States. They've been here that long.
Yeah, same. You know, my running gag
you know,
is that
you can see,
I'm English enough to want everybody else's land, Scottish enough to get the job done, Irish enough to write songs about it, German enough to do it with ruthless precision, and Swiss enough to make sure it gets done on time.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you can see the records from like the Revolutionary War of like my ancestors, like, you know, like their pensions. It's really cool. Everyone should just try it for fun.
It's absolutely fascinating, yes.
And it constantly updates. You know, you're always getting updates and whatnot as the more precise it becomes.
And
then we come back from all that fun and we pay Trump.
I know. I cherish these little conversations where we sort of step back from the madness and wickedness of the day.
Yeah.
Because because again, it's that 95% happy thing. Because the same people who hate me and who hate you, would lay down their own lives for him.
I know, it's remarkable. You know, the first time he won, I was thinking to myself, like when I would go outside, that there's some people that are probably right next to me that voted for Trump. And I just thought, what is wrong with these people? How could they be? I didn't realize there were so many racists and ignorant people out there. I really had no idea. And I started thinking, well, you know, remember in school where there were the stupid kids, the dumb kids who are always throwing things and causing commotion and whatnot? I'm like, those are the maggots of today. They grew up and became maggots. While the rest of us have to be surrounded by them. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here we go. Emilio just wrote in and said 23andMe. Stop being so genetically fascist, Robin. Here, oh, Jesus. I can't help it. I mean, I'm kind of surprised, actually, considering all the... We're talking about the English and the Scots. How did I wind up with absolutely no indigenous genetic material whatsoever? Because, well, yeah. The English and the Scots were not particularly persnickety about who, well, the men were not particularly persnickety about who they romped with.
Right. Well, I clinged on to the Portuguese. I thought that was cool.
Well, that's true. And Lou in PA remembers, I am like 0.2% Syrian from like 3,000 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So I've got that going for me, which is good. Jesus.
Yeah. There's another service that if you use the same sample that you send into Ancestry or 23andMe, you send it to them, like you give permission for them to access it, and they will give you a prehistoric DNA story.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and I saw mine. You know, it was free, but if you want more information, you have to pay for it.
Well, if you happen to recall who that outfit is, please just send me a note over on Twitter, and that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, it
find
was a
out.
Weird name, like Adco or Ab, something like that. Yeah, because it was kind of interesting, but you know, I couldn't interpret the results. I had no idea what it meant, and they don't really give you much information. You have to pay for everything.
Oh, sure. Oh, by the way, Randy Radar just...
But it did show that they were from, like, the Middle East.
Randy Radar just asked, yeah, but can you yodel? We have a $1,610 fundraising hole, Randy Radar. I ain't about to yodel.
Oh, no. I haven't even thought of that. Huh.
If singing is out, yodeling is all the way gone. By the way, Matt in San Francisco says Irish and Italian. Best I could do is a drunk guy who loves pasta.
Yeah.
Totally. I think Matt's getting a little dig in at the both of us. What is this winter thing of which you speak, Matt? I mean, yeah, I think we got up to 48. It was sunny and beautiful. But we got up to 48 degrees today. Woohoo!
It's 83 here.
Shut up. You shut up, too. taunting. Because I am so tired of ugly boots for slop, marching through slop and insulated leggings and things that cover me from the bottom of my that go from the bottom of my chin to long sleeves and scratchy wool and let's face it, I have to be bombarded
by the snowbirds here.
Oh, I'm sure you do. I have to be careful about the sun, but I just want to lay out in the sun so stinking bad it's not even funny.
Well, I used to be an avid tanner, and I love the sun. I love going swimming, all of that stuff in the summer. But last year I had basal cell carcinoma on my nose.
That will put the fear of Jesus in you.
Yeah, and so they had to cut it out and everything. And so that ruined it for me.
That's what I was talking about this past Monday. I had what I thought was going to be an appointment to get a mole cut out of my chest. And it turns out that...
Oh, yeah, I remember you saying that.
And it turned out it was the consult, and I'm going to get it cut out in June. Great.
Huh. I wonder if... Where is it? On your chest, you said?
Yeah. It's right above my right boob.
Right after the dermatologist surgeon took out the cancer part, I had to go to a plastic surgeon, like from his office to a plastic surgeon. That's how they do it. I didn't know that. A plastic surgeon has to sew you up. But I'm not sure if they do it on the chest.
He kind of poked around and measured it and said, "Yeah, we're gonna have to go in and cut that out because it doesn't rise above the plane of the surface of my skin." So he's gonna go in and great.
Exactly. Yeah, the surgery wasn't a big deal, but the thing I hate is needles. I can't stand it.
Those I've learned to cope with, as a.
Especially when they poke you in the nose with a big needle.
Ooh, that doesn't sound fun at all.
It was painful. They didn't do it twice because the first time I jerked. Yeah.
Wow.
But once you're numbed, you don't care.
Once I'm asleep, I don't care.
They're not going to put you to sleep.
No, they're not. So... I'll lie back and think of England.
Well, I had stents put in my heart, and they don't put you in a sleep spot either.
No, they just kind of do the twilight thing, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little, I forget what the drug's called, but the comic name for it is Milk of Amnesia. Because it's a real milky color, and you don't remember anything. It's a cocktail of Versed and some other stuff, and it's like, I don't care, and I don't remember. I remember the first time I had a procedure that
Speaking
involved
of
that.
Speaking of Star Trek references,
yes, we need one.
One
of those,
time
by
I
way.
Was under like that, and the thing is that I was having a dream about Star Trek, and I was speaking. During it, I was talking during the dream, and I was talking about it. And I don't even remember what was going on or anything like that, but it was so funny when the doctor was telling me, and I'm like, oh, God, I hope I didn't say anything totally embarrassing.
yeah, that was my
start. I try not to think about that.
Yeah, it's funny that you could just blurt out anything while you're ungrowing.
Well, Carl, this has been a lovely conversation. There's about a half an hour left in the program, and I'm going to try to get back around to doing just a little bit of news. This, as you said, this is your first solo call, and you have soloed perfectly.
Oh, thank goodness. Well, it was such a pleasure talking to you.
Well, I hope you won't be a stranger.
Well, you have a great rest of the show, and I will listen tonight on the podcast while you talk about spirochetes.
Okay. I will try not to screw up the podcast or get the wrong date on it or anything. Some days. Carl, you have
Have a good one, Robin.
You have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for the call.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Carl in Phoenix. I think we have another voice to add to the community, because that conversation went all over the place and it was absolutely delightful. By the way, like I said, there's about a half an hour left in the program, a little less, and we can avoid a goose egg. Ralph's put up a Dark Brandon challenge. This is great. Ralph's will match $25 if someone will put it forward. The Dark Brandon challenge. This is beautiful. During a fundraiser in Houston, while on a riff about Trump's handling of COVID-19, Joe Biden asks the donor crowd, "Remember when he said inject bleach?" Yes. Well, the crowd was like, "Ha ha ha, yeah." And so Biden takes the two count. The man knows how to do comedy. He takes the two count, lets the laughter die down, and says, "I think he must have done it." Ow! Oh! And this is the guy they think is senile. You can't be that funny and not be in your best mental state. Remember when he said inject bleach? I think he must have done it. Ooh. You know, I will feel so validated if somebody ever picks up Nitwit Nero and runs with it, because that's mine. It's absolutely mine. I'm a woman of simple pleasures. Thank you for the challenge, Ralphs. Now all we got to do is find somebody who wants to fulfill it. And thank you, Matt. Matt said I really enjoyed that call. I did too. God, this is a wonderful community. It so many points of view, so many perspectives, so much life experience, so much goodwill. I don't think there's another program that takes calls live that has this much goodwill. And it's really refreshing. Genuinely so. Jude says, "I find the many different seasons of our callers as each offers a door into their world, a moment to be present through voices and revealing thoughts." Carl, thank you. Thank you, Jude. You're always so uplifting. And by the way, a little follow-up coming from Darlene in Connecticut. The sister of Elaine Chao, the sister-in-law of Moscow Mitch McConnell. Wall Street Journal reporting, because of course, Angela Chao was well over alcohol limit at time of fatal Texas accident. Nothing to see here. Move along. This is not the murder you're looking for. Thank you, Darlene. And by the way, breaking news. Thank you, Ralphs. Senator Bob Menendez in New Jersey has announced he will not run for re-election as a Democrat this year in the New Jersey primary. I mean, I think that's probably wise on his part. Still only getting worse and worse and worse, and New Jersey needs a Democratic senator who can be effective. Meanwhile, our anonymous internet friend says, "I'll match that $25 and put forth an additional $25 one-for-one challenge." So that would get us down to $15.10 and only $10 away from being fully funded for last Thursday. Thank you, kind anonymous internet friend. And hopefully someone will answer the additional one-for-one challenge. And well, two people at $10 and one at $5, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the, good God, this is terrifying. Randy Radar, and this comes from Social Security Works. The Republican Party wants the media to tell you that Republicans won't cut Social Security. Don't believe them. Look at their budget. Last night, congressional Republicans released a plan to cut Social Security by $1.5 trillion. Among other things, it eliminates survivors' benefits for spouses and children. It uses a more draconian calculation to determine how benefits keep pace with inflation, meaning a pernicious effect on cost of living adjustments. And it zeroes out one of the most intelligent things done of late, namely Medicare's ability to negotiate lower prices on prescription drugs, and it goes further toward the piratization of Medicare. And as Social Security Works points out, 80% of the House Republican caucus belongs to the Republican Study Committee, which released that budget proposal. The Jerusalem Post crowing that the Republican budget contains support for Israel. The committee chairwoman, Kay Granger of Texas's office, she's retired, of course, she said $4 billion goes to Israel for more bombs to kill more Palestinian children. Over 5 months ago, we witnessed Hamas brutally attack the Israeli people. Unfortunately, the situation in the region has only gotten worse. Now more than ever, we must support our ally Israel in its efforts to murder countless women and Palestinian women and children. Oh, I'm sorry. Defend itself against the attacks of Hamas, an Iranian-backed proxy. Oh, that was Representative Kay Granger. No, I was thinking of a different. I was thinking of a senator. No, she's still there. The Further Consolidated Appropriations Act continues our commitment to Israel, providing critical defense assistance and holding the new 90 nations accountable for its blatant bias against our great ally. And in the case of the new 90 nations Relief and Works Agency, it's proven collusion with Hamas. Because the UNRWA, in trying to provide some degree of relief for innocent Palestinian women and children, well, that's colluding with Hamas, according to Kay Granger. I was thinking of Kay Bailey Hutchinson. A lot of K's and takes S. K, K, K. Mm-hmm. Nothing, meanwhile, for Ukraine, because that's a fight for democracy, and democracy is the last thing that the maggots are interested in. Oh, and we were talking about this just the other day, about how Fannie Willis could, you know, she's got a primary and she's got a reelection effort coming up, about how she could set up the trials there in Fulton County. News is CNN is saying that via Zachary Cohen, multiple sources telling me that, look, Fannie Willis is going to once again ask Judge Scott McAfee to set a trial date for Donald Trump and his remaining co-defendants in the Georgia case, and set one for as soon as this summer. This would be the second time Fonnie Willis has asked Judge McAfee to set a trial date. Cohen went on and said, and it's, you know, this second request would by all means be a bold move from Fonnie Willis, considering what we've been talking about for the last 2 months. We've been talking about allegations of an improper romantic relationship that Willis had with her special prosecutor. Thank you for that, Mr. Cohen. Yeah, she should agree to bifurcate or trifurcate or quadrificate, I don't even know if that's a word, the trial, and make nitwit Nero's first. Randy Radar says that Chris Hedges is saying that the temporary aid dock in Gaza will be used to evacuate and relocate the Gazans. Ethnic cleansing. Even in the teeth of your sotto voce comment at 6:38 p.m., Lou writes, why do the Nazis hate Zeons? Why? Because without us to hate, there would be nothing to hold them together. Spock and Isak, the original series, Patterns of Force. Wow. Yeah. And, from Kat in Ohio. This is so sweet. Thank you, Kat. Just listened to Wednesday's podcast. Tell Cynthia sorry. Didn't mean to upstage her getting the vacuum sealer for you. Just saw it at a good price, and you talked about getting one before, so I just sent it. Spur of the moment thing, LOL. Oh, Kat, thank you so much. God, my sous vide game is going to ramp up significantly. I can't wait to learn how to use it and get to sous viding some more. And a little bit ago, Dave in the Blind wrote, it's the transcripts for the end. Freedom of speech and the right of a victim to tell the story. This goes back to Lucky and that repulsive maggot legislator from Nebraska. Freedom of speech and the right of a victim to tell the story of their assault and their experience to let other people know they're not alone. This Nebraska senator who ended up targeting two of his colleagues has no shame. And is an acolyte to Donald Trump, where everything painful is Republican, and we're going to prove it because we'll be just as filthy and nasty as we want to be, and there's nothing you can do about it. Dave says, I'm getting to the point where I'm equating all Republicans with fascists, and I don't like where that goes, because I have a feeling about good fascists, and I don't want to even mentally cause that kind of carnage. Your buddy Dave, the Blind. Yes, I did, Randy Radar. Yes, I did. Thank you. By the way, since I mentioned Fonnie Willis, the latest shenanigans. Of marginal trailer queen, she grunted on. Well, she went on X and posted an excrement, saying she's filed a petition to disbar Fonnie Willis for persecuting poor Donald Trump. Oh, will no one rid us of this meddlesome sporkfoot? Maybe the voters in Georgia, but no, they apparently don't have enough shame to see how badly. She's embarrassing them. Good God. Oh, and I had a note from Jessica earlier when we were talking about space and being embarrassed that we're going back to space on the backs of an absolute fascist. I mean, granted, NASA made it to the moon on the back of one, or several, actually. In the form of the German engineers and scientists that we brought over to the United States rather than letting the Soviets have them, most prominent among them being Werner von Braun. The rocket goes up. Who cares where it comes down? It's not my concern, says Werner von Braun. Was it Tom Lehrer? And apartheid in space, 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 space. Jessica said, don't get me started on being frustrated and disappointed with the space program. I'm very passionate about it and I'm frequently emotional when discussing it. If my brain was better wired for mathematics, I'd be sitting at JPL right now. Sadly, NASA has no need for a nearly 50-year-old trans woman with a worthless history degree. Drop the ball is a severe understatement. Thank you, Jessica. Yeah, not a lot of need for English majors at NASA either, you know? I so get it. Ah, TJ. Hey, TJ. No charges to be filed in fight involving Nix Benedict. It's okay to beat a trans kid to the point of traumatic brain injury, apparently. An Oklahoma district attorney says he doesn't plan to file any charges in the case of 16-year-old Owosso teenager whose death following a fight in a high school bathroom was ruled a suicide. That seems like such an incurious diagnosis. First of all, who deliberately ODs on Prozac and Benadryl? Two, people with traumatic brain injuries make not good choices in the midst of said traumatic brain injury. But Oklahoma just wants it to go away. So this means that if there's going to be any justice for Nix, it will have to come via the United States Department of Justice and the Civil Rights Division, or preferably the Criminal Division. Oklahoma has no problem. Oh, and by the way, since we're talking about Nix for just a second, I mentioned the fact that the medical examiner's office that made the suicide ruling lost its accreditation in 2009 and has not regained it since. And then this. The vicious students, who beat him, Nix, were on in-school suspension. They were already in trouble as problem students and didn't get, you know, shit for supervision. Thank you so much to our pal Texas T. Our kind anonymous internet friends challenge has been met, and so we are now down to $1,510. And ah, Samson, thank you so much. Hey, y'all, last Thursday is fully funded. Thank you so much, and we've got $40 of last Friday funded. So we are at $1,460. $1,460 to be fully funded up to this date. Thank you so much, Samson. That's tremendous. Because I got bills breathing down my neck and it's stressful. Randy Radar says, my brother worked at NASA, and I actually worked on a software product that was supposedly used by NASA. That's cool. That's something to be proud of. I don't know how proud I would be of working for SpaceX. Working on the fascistization of space. Although Micah did point out, or reminded me, I should say, that there are apparently trans girls who work in IT and computer engineering at SpaceX, and I remembered one in particular that I saw, and that most of them appear to be compliant pick-me's for Leon Scum. back to Fonnie Willis. Matt in San Francisco says she should start selling a perfume. She can call it Mendacity. Yeah, I was wrong. Ron and Raleigh pointed that out and sent me a link during yesterday's program. I was wrong, no. The Judge McAfee was not pointing the finger at that horrible shit show of a lawyer. What is it, Ashley Merchant? No, he was accusing the black woman of lying. And that's pretty disgusting. Sorry, I'm having some non-cooperation on the part of the Fab Machine. Just one second, and we'll try to get another story in, and then we'll wrap up. And yes... This is funny. You know, yesterday during the program, we played the entirety of Lev Parnas' testimony implicating Russia being behind the Biden smears. I thought we might find it interesting to see how it played on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
Father and sister and I had left the Soviet Union, escaping anti-Semitism and persecution. While in Rome and en route to Israel, my sister and I won the most important opportunity that we have ever been given. We won a U.S. green card lottery. My family came here with literally no more than shirts on our back and the hopes of rebuilding our lives in the land of freedom. I say this to you because I love this country. From shortly after my arrest on October 9, 2019 to now, I have been trying to share the irrefutable truth with you. The American people have been lied to by Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, and various cohorts of individuals in government and media positions. They created falsehoods to serve their own interests, knowing it would undermine the strength of our nation. From November 2018 to October 2019,
yeah,
I was a key
this.
Participant and a witness to numerous efforts to prove that Joe and Hunter Biden were linked to corruption in Ukraine. Rudy Giuliani, on behalf of then President Donald Trump, tasked me with a mission to travel the globe, finding dirt on the Bidens so that an array of networks could spread misinformation about them, thus securing the 2020 election for Donald J. Trump. Ironically, when I was arrested, my original indictment linked me...
Now, remember, this is the feed from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
...to an individual referred to as unindicted co-conspirator one. We now know this individual to be Congressman Pete Sessions, who sits on this very committee today. Today I ask you to consider the following. In nearly a year traveling the world and interviewing officials in different countries, I found precisely zero evidence of the Biden's corruption in Ukraine. No credible source has ever provided proof of criminal activity, not the FBI, CIA, nor the NSA. No respectable Ukrainian official has ever said that the Biden did anything illegal, including former President Poroshenko and former Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko. Even when CEO of Burisma, Mykola Zlochevsky, was offered a deal by Rudy Giuliani in exchange for information on the Bidens, he provided none, because there is none. The only information ever pushed on the Bidens in Ukraine has come from one source, and one source only, Russia and Russian agents. The impeachment proceedings that bring us here now are predicated on false information spread by the Kremlin. Everyone involved knew...
So this bit of a preview right now. This hearing is going to be hot, so stand by for more on that. I want to bring in Jesse Waters right now. He's been sitting patiently to our left.
Yeah, let's bring in Jesse Waters instead of listening to Lev Parnas drop the dime on the nitwit Nero administration. And hence they cut away, and that was it. The impeachment proceedings that bring us here now are predicated on false information spread by the Kremlin. And somebody back in the control room is like, cut it, cut it, cut it. Oh, for God's sakes, cut it now. Because Emery and Marveline sitting there in their matching barca loungers at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club cannot be allowed to hear just how filthy, how dirty, how, dare I say it, un-American Nitwit Nero and his vulgar cronies are. At one more, just because it's so pleasant. It's so refreshing. They had a gender hearing in the House Judiciary Committee today where Jim Jacket Off Jordan is inexplicably the chair. And Eric Swalwell, God, you know, Jacket Off must just dread him opening his mouth. Because every time Eric Swalwell speaks, Jacket Off Jordan bursts into flames. So this hearing was about biological women who are somehow victimized by sharing locker space with trans women. Locker rooms. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a slam dunk for the ages for Eric Swalwell.
Oh, gentleman from California is recognized.
I guess it's a good thing that some folks on the other side are now interested in what happens in a locker room, and we're not going to look the other way. Okay, I'll accept that. But this is something that is not a thing. Ms. Jackson Lee, who has a bill to address the targeted violence against the transgender community, that's a thing. That's something we should be working on. This is not a thing, and so I just invite my Democratic colleagues who have so passionately spoke on this to continue to passionately speak on this, but to just reject this as a thing. And thank you for caring about what happens in locker rooms. I yield back.
Ow. Ow. Because, of course, that was a direct dig at Jim Jacket Off Jordan and the fact that he looked the other way when young men were being raped by the team doctor at the Ohio State University in the wrestling program. Because Jim Jacket Off Jordan's a big wrestler. The rapist's name was Dr. Richard Strauss. He worked from the late 70s to all the way into the 1990s and raped or sexually abused at least 177 young men. And he looked straight at Jim Jacket Off Jordan Swalwell did when he said, oh, and thank you for caring about what happens in locker rooms. I don't know who's given these Democrats their lessons in shade. But by God, they're paying attention. Wow. Good on you, Eric Swalwell. To the same extent that people in Georgia should be ashamed of the shenanigans of Marjorie Trailer Queen Sporkfoot, the people who send Eric Swalwell to office have a right to be justifiably proud. Okay, one last thing, because I was a couple minutes late. Today, over at Substack, the co-founder of Above the Law, David Lott, put up a post, a bit of breaking news. At least two clerks for Aileen Cannon have thrown in the towel, called it quits, and hit the bricks. And he pointed out a New York Times article that talked about how glacially slow things move in Aileen Cannon's corrupt court. Writing, Cannon has done herself no favors by allowing a logjam of unresolved issues to build up on her docket. At which point, David Lott said, I have an idea of at least one factor behind the delays. Judge Cannon has had at least two law clerks quit on her, according to multiple sources, including individuals who serve in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida, where she sits. And went on to say a U.S. District Court judge usually has two or three clerks, and so when two quit, it has a profound impact on her ability to get the job done. And went further and said it's really super unusual for a clerk to quit because the clerk is only there for a year. And it's and under ordinary circumstance, having been a clerk to a U.S. district judge is a huge feather in the cap on a lawyer's resume. Latt said, over the past few days, I've sent multiple emails to the Public Information Office for the Southern District of Florida and to Judge Cannon's chambers requesting comment on reports that at least two of her clerks have departed before the scheduled end of their clerkships. I've received read receipts, but no responses, even though in my experience, subjects are eager to warn me off bad information, for which I'm always grateful. When a clerk resigns, it's an extremely unpleasant situation. Even if clerks who leave get replaced immediately, which doesn't always happen, especially if clerks quit on short notice or the judge is too busy to focus on hiring, successor clerks need to get up to speed on both chambers procedures and the substance of cases. This is very time consuming, especially in complex cases like the Trump classified documents prosecution. And so since she's understaffed and probably by her own doing, the fact that she has a log jam is a lot less surprising. And then David Latt continued to update, and he said he found out that one clerk had been there for 2 years and quit in 2023 after having a baby. Another clerk quit, though, for unclear reasons, and law school classmates have been buzzing about the news. She had three clerks and one temp. So now she's down to one clerk and one temp, or two clerks and no temp. And she cannot do her job, which she has proven all along. Oh, and again, the shade. Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, got into it with California State Senator Scott Wiener. Wiener is from San Francisco, and he's openly gay, and a lot of people think that when Nancy Pelosi retires, he's going to have the inside track to her seat. Now, there is a judicial nominee for a seat on the Third Circuit, U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, named Adil Mangi. His nomination is a big deal because Mangi would be the first appellate judge in the United States who's a Muslim. Naturally, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz is attacking the nominee. I should also add that because, of course, Joe to the Manchin Born said he will not vote to confirm Adil Mongi. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada has also said the same. He said he won't support any Biden judicial nominee who can't even get one Republican vote. Oh, you fuckwit! And, of course, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz has all but accused Adil Mongi of being a supporter of Hamas. Also, guilt by association, attacking Mongi for his relationship or association with the Center for Security, Race, and Rights at Rutgers University. It's blatant, disgusting, toxic Islamophobia. Press Secretary at the White House, Karine Jean-Pierre, yesterday told reporters, Mr. Mongi, who has lived the American dream and proven his integrity, is being targeted by a malicious and debunked smear campaign solely because he would make history as the first Muslim to serve as a federal appellate judge. Senate Democrats should side with the qualities that make America exceptional, which Mr. Mongi embodies, not the hateful forces trying to force America into the past. So, you know, naturally, if there's an opportunity to fuck over the Biden administration, Joe to the Manchin Born is just the man for the job. Lining up with a disgusting bigot like Rafaelito Cruz. Well, enter Scott Wiener, state senator from California, who responded to an excrement that Rafaelito posted on X. Suffice to say that Senator Wiener is Jewish. Responding to Rafaelito, he said, this is straight up Islamophobia. This nominee is highly qualified. Ted Cruz grilled him about October 7th. That's no different than grilling a Jewish nominee about Israel's conduct of the war. Are they asking other nominees these questions? Of course not. Only the Muslim nominee. Rafaelito responded in his usual bitchy way, saying, wait, I thought this guy was thrown out of Congress for sending naked pictures of himself. He can't tell the difference between Scott Wiener and Anthony Wiener from New York. Totally different people, but don't expect a bigot to realize that. So yesterday, Scott Wiener wrote back and said, Ted, remember when we went to law school together and everyone hated you? Because they did. Shade, shade, shade. Everyone hated you. I think I'm a Senator Scott Wiener fan now. I hope he does have the inside track to Nancy Pelosi's seat. Because using the speech and debate clause, he can attack Rafaelito from the House anytime he wants. Okay. Emilio, there's your cowbell. I suspect Lindsey Graham was deeply disappointed the first time he visited Substack. Again, shade. Well played. Well, thank you, Jude. Hugs back. Aw. Cute photo, Jude. So that's the program. Made up for the lost minutes. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. We always need new subscribers. Either Patreon or PayPal. It's real easy to do. God, we need new subscribers. We need more subscribers, not new. I mean more. Thank you to all of our subscribers for sticking around the way you have. Thank you so much. Thanks to our a la carte contributors, our challenge makers, our challenge respondents. Thank you so much for keeping this little effort, broadcast effort going. Biggest bargain in progressive talk, without a doubt. Hell, it's a bigger bargain than iTunes. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please like each episode. Subscribe if you haven't. Leave a comment, please. Thanks to those of you who already do. By the way, going all the way back to Halloran in Nebraska, Brother Deacon Asa said, "Wow, these motherfuckers are so vile and degenerate. The next pig fucker who proclaims family values should be hanged in the public square." Speaking metaphorically, Agent Fred. No disrespect to security guards. This is Stone Toss. It's good, honest work, but it's quite curious as to why we don't have any incels who are mathematicians or astrophysicists. As for his IT career, I'm thinking more likely help desk rather than systems architect. Ow, that's going to burn. By the way, Nitwit Nero proclaimed bitterly today that he's never mocked Joe Biden's stutter. Even though, you know, it's on tape. All he has to do is tell him he didn't do it. The maggot said he didn't do it. Well, I didn't do it. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. By the way, I got a note from Ben earlier today after a quarter century of service and never sending a bill. Ben is calling it quits on the White Rose Society. If there's anything that you want to say, want to download from there, do it between now and June 1st, because as of June 1st, the website that actually kept progressive radio alive during the years in the wilderness, the decades in the wilderness, will go dark. And I will never, ever be able to thank Ben Birch enough. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Coal River Mountain Watch was busy today with a permit hearing on a mountaintop removal site down in the sacrifice zone, doing everything in their power to stop it and perhaps save lives if they can get this mine shut down. Visit Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They are truly as grassroots gets, and they are deserving of your kind support. Please stay safe. Get your booster, flu shot, shingles vaccine, etc. Wear your mask around the maggots, because if you don't, you're liable to get something you don't want. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse, maintain your social distance. And if a blonde sporkfoot comes toward you yelling, barking, and grunting, and hooting about, I want a disc bar, Fonnie Willis, avoid marginal trailer queen like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.